Welcome to the HJ Talks About Abuse podcast. In this podcast, we talk about sexual abuse cases in the hope it will assist listeners in openly discussing topics which have been ignored for too long. This podcast is brought to you by the abuse team at Hugh James. We are lawyers, so we do tend to speak about the legal aspects of abuse cases, but we aren't too shy to speak up about the broader issues faced by survivors too.
Hello, podcast listeners. This is Sam Barker from Hugh James Solicitors, and I'm here with my colleague and the partner in charge of the abuse team at Hugh James, Alan Collins.
Hi, Sam, and hi to everyone.
Perfect. Well, thank you all for listening. Today, what we're going to cover is the independent inquiry into child sex abuse and some information about what the inquiry has covered in the past and what they're set to cover in the near future. Just as a bit of background, the Independent Inquiry into Child Sex Abuse has been running for a couple of years now. It was set up by Theresa May following the revelations into Jimmy Savile, a case which Alan was heavily involved in for years. And they've conducted a number of hearings so far, which span from protection of children outside of the United Kingdom to the Catholic Church here in the United Kingdom to the English Benedictines and a lot in between. There's still a lot to cover, and today we're going to talk about two hearings, one past and one upcoming. And the first one we're going to speak about is the inquiry into child migration, which is a tragic part of British history and indeed Australian history as well, and not to mention Southern Rhodesia and Canada as well, and a case that we at Hugh James have been involved in for some time now. So, Alan, what's been happening in that arena, and quite particularly Lisa and Andy asked some questions in relation to the compensation scheme in Parliament recently. So can you give an update?
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, UK government announced that every migrant was going to be eligible to a lump sum payment of £20,000, described as an ex gratia payment. And yeah, that sounds great, of course, but a lot of migrants and their families have started to ask questions about how this has come about. And Lisa Nandy identified in Parliament on the 26th of February that there are real concerns. Many migrants are saying, well, there's a complete lack of consultation. We didn't know what was going on. No one asked us for our opinion. And we just don't like the fact that there's been this complete lack of consultation. On top of that, there are many who are concerned about the level of compensation, because many of the migrants have had a really difficult lives because of the abuse that they were subjected to as a result of the migration policy. So there's some real legitimate questions being asked. And so I fear, but it's with justification, that there's a lot of unfinished business.
Yeah, indeed. Well, as we know from our experience acting for a number of child migrants, as they were and still identified to be now, many look to schemes set up in places such as Australia as to how much compensation should be made and perhaps even where there was wider consultation. What we're looking at here in the UK is a figure set which is the same for all, regardless as to whether there was sexual abuse or otherwise. But what, in my view, this fails to take into account is obviously a full appreciation of the horrors a lot of these people experienced, but also loss of family, loss of identity from their time in Britain and indeed being former British citizens or still British citizens. So it's difficult to quantify, and perhaps there should have been further consultation.
I think there should have been. It's a missed opportunity. What ought to have been a line in the sand moment has turned out not to be a line in the sand moment, and that's a great shame. The government's come forward with a scheme and it sort of messed it up, really, because it has not properly consulted with the migrants and their families. Had it done so, the scheme, in whatever form, may well have been more acceptable and may well have had a more sort of holistic benefit. It may have helped many to have moved on. As it is, they now feel that once again the UK government has overlooked them, a bit roughshod in a way, and that's a great shame. So I fear we may be witnessing a sort of lost opportunity.
Yeah, there was a lot of scope. Sorry, there was a narrow scope into what the independent inquiry into child sexual abuse could have actually looked into. There's only so many witnesses they can hear from in an amount of time. And in fact, in my view, they did a great job in listening to so many people's stories and taking evidence from a lot of court participants, etc. But there was a lot more scope for what the government could have done in the follow-up. And we're talking in an eight-month period till they took them to announce there would actually be a scheme. We haven't heard once what was undertaken in the background to arrive at these figures. And I think that that's something child migrants are entitled to know. How was this figure arrived at, and what does it encompass?
In the parliamentary session on the 26th of February, it looks as though the UK government has borrowed a scheme that operated in Northern Ireland when there was a lump sum payment. It just seems to have, maybe for expedience, adopted what was done elsewhere and thought, well, yeah, we'll use this as a quick fix. But I don't think this quick fix, if that's what it is necessarily going to deliver the justice that many of the migrants and their families were looking for.
And we've seen Lisa Nandy taking up the mantle in Parliament, asking questions in relation to this. It'll be very interesting to see what the response is. So moving on to other parts of what there were other hearings which are scheduled by the inquiry, I think a lot of listeners would be very interested to know about the upcoming hearings into organised or essentially organised sexual abuse and groups, grooming groups. We've seen this as a real problem across England in Rochdale. We've seen it recently in Bradford with a whole number of convictions and serious convictions here. We're talking a group of men who have all been sentenced between 17 and 25 years in prison. The BBC have recently focused on it in a three-part mini-series into the Rochdale situation, where the show's called Three Girls, and it's a really harrowing tale and really difficult to watch, actually, but quite needed to highlight the problem. So the inquiry is looking into this as the next group of hearings. And Alan, what do you know about that?
Well, yes, one of the remits for the inquiry is to look at contemporary concerns and issues when it comes to the sexual exploitation of children. So we've got to remember that over the last couple of years, there's been a whole series of shocking cases of large numbers of children being groomed and sexually exploited by groups of men. You've mentioned Bradford, there's also been Oxford, in particular, where there has been serious organised or semi-organised exploitation of children, in particular teenage girls. And I think everyone is rightly shocked when these stories emerge, because many of the children seem to come from vulnerable backgrounds. They seem to fall between the gaps in the provision of services. They seem to somehow or other gravitate towards these exploitative men. They seem to find what they need in life from these characters, and they descend into a vicious spiral of neglect, sexual exploitation and abuse. And so when I meet them and you listen to them and they explain their life stories, it's often a case of falling between the gaps. They were vulnerable. They meet these men, and these men become, the only way I can describe it, as substitutes. Substitutes for parents, carers, schools, whatever children and young people are entitled to expect. And so they get caught up in this world, and they know no different. And away it goes. And the children, young people, very often don't see themselves as being exploited, but of course they are, in the worst possible ways. Unsurprisingly, you end up with very, very damaged individuals. And it costs society enormous sums of money. To put it in black and white terms, of course, is wasted lives and ruined lives as well. So the cost to society of this type of exploitation is immense. And so I hope ICSA does take the opportunity of looking at these cases and actually hearing from the young people who get caught up in it. And maybe as a result of that, ICSA will be able to make recommendations as to how these risks in society can be plugged. But having said that, there have been numerous inquiries over the years in respect of very vulnerable children being exploited, yet the tragedies keep on replicating themselves.
Yeah, I think that this is a really important hearing within the remit of the inquiry, because this is focusing on an issue which is actually pressing and prevalent today, rather than being something that's quite historic. We see some of the hearings that ICSA have conducted, which have largely looked back very far. These are things that had happened a long time ago and weren't things that were continuing today. I mean, specifically in relation to focusing on groups of cases back in the 90s. And right now we're seeing, you know, for the Bradford case as a prime example, these convictions were very recent. These are things which are happening today.
Indeed, the work that's been done on the cases from the past, and they really are from the past, and one, I think, can question the value of examining those cases. But having said that, if the inquiry takes those other inquiries, those inquiries into past cases, and uses that knowledge to equip it to look at contemporary abuse of children, then it would have been worthwhile.
Absolutely.
So I think you've got to take from those past investigations, from those past inquiries, take that knowledge, take that information, take that learning, and build it into what you are looking at in contemporary society today, and try and understand how it is that so many children are being abused on such a large scale by these large groups of men.
Yeah, really organised. I was particularly struck by watching this BBC show the other night, which is on Netflix. It's a three-part series into the Rochdale, basically a grooming gang up there, which, and I was particularly struck by how organised it was, how insidious it is and was, how they used every kind of vice possible that they could to exert control and pressure over these girls. They were all young girls between the age of 12 and 15. We're talking about fear, intimidation, but also playing to the advantage for the abuser, that these girls were vulnerable and they didn't have much in their lives in terms of people who could guide them and look after them. They were largely on the child protection register, not in care. And it was through, it seems, a group of individuals working for a sexual health clinic who highlighted this problem and brought it to the attention of the authorities, who weren't necessarily wanting to look at it at the time. So there's a lot to learn.
Yeah, so these children often have huge gaps or holes in their lives, and these exploitative men become substitutes, and therefore the children, the young people, see these men who are exploiting them as men who are, in their eyes, to their mind, caring for them. I know it all sounds
ludicrous,
awful, ludicrous, extraordinary, but that's how they see it. They don't see these men as abusers. Met a client the other day. She still sees her abuser, who's now in prison, as someone who cared for her. And of course, you know, that's the world that she found herself in. And that's, you know, one of the big challenges that any inquiry has to get to grips with, you know, the reality of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's the reality is not black and white. It's these people who want to abuse children. It's all very subtle, the way it all comes about. And that's what we've got to recognise.
Yeah, the predators who will take advantage of any shortcoming in care and protection, but also vulnerabilities, all of those things.
Yeah.
They prey on anything.
That's right. It's not always drugs. It's quite often these situations, you know, drugs is the, you know, the lure, so to speak. But in a lot of these cases, it's providing shelter. It's providing food. It's providing warmth. It's providing company. It's all the very basic things that nearly everyone takes for granted. And if you haven't got it, and you're 13 or 14, and this character can provide you with a roof for the night, somewhere warm, you're going to get fed, protected, you can see how a child is going to gravitate to that if they haven't got it in their existing environment.
Yeah, so a big tragedy, and something we're seeing is a real issue today. It's a good thing that the inquiry is looking into this. I think that it's going to be something we'll be watching with a lot of interest. So that's Sam signing off and
Alan signing off too. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of HJ Talks About Abuse. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. If you would like to speak to Alan or I about something you have heard this week, or even if you would like to suggest a topic for a future episode, please do get in touch at aboutabuse@hjtalks.co.uk.